folks. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant, and this is Now We're Talking. I've been listening to some radio this week, and I feel like there's a correlation between people that think they're good on the radio and that behavior. Just like, I know how to speak on the radio just to leave the maximum amount of dead air without it being intolerable or unacceptable. With me, as always, is Keith Kennedy. And Keith, this is the beginning in our own minds of series two. I mean, this is a show. We've done 10 episodes. We started in June. Radio isn't usually defined in those terms, but we've decided it's a new school year here on campus at UBC. Not that we're a part of that in any way, but we're surrounded by the fact that the school session is happening here, the September session. And we were talking about it. We decided we did 10 episodes. It's a nice, clean number. That was the summer series. In effect, this is the beginning of series two of Now We're Talking. That's how we're defining it, right?
Yeah. We don't need your rules, man. We'll do it like British television all we want.
Yeah, that's what they do on British television. That's what they do on Netflix.
So I guess they do 6-episode seasons on British television, but 10's pretty common
now. But they
now.
Use the term series in reference to a season.
Which we're, yeah.
Which I think people are starting to do in reference to shows, or am I making that up?
No, that's correct.
Yeah, I feel like...
if it emboldens our point, is that the right word?
Emboldens.
Yeah.
I feel embiggens. Like, I feel like with the advent of internet TV shows, that's being more embraced. And I feel like it gives some nice separation for us. And who knows, whether every 10 episodes will constitute a series, or maybe it correlates with the changing of the actual seasons.
Yeah.
And the rotation of the Earth and all that. That's how we're defining it. So we had a good series one. We did a lot of great interviews. We talked a lot of... Talked about a lot of different things. We had lots of different segments. Some of that we're going to continue to do in series two. But, you know, one thing we want to make sure we invite you to do as listeners of the show, on the radio portion of the show, and of course the show is also a podcast, but if you're listening live to CITR, feel free to give us a call at 604-822-2487.
Did the radio pause thing again.
Well, this time it wasn't deliberate. It was because I'm not wearing my glasses, and the distance between me and the numbers is just barely enough for me to read. But you know what? Forget that. It's 604-UBC-CITR. Don't forget my invitation to call, but forget about all those numbers. It's 604-UBC-CITR. You can translate that to numbers. We want to make sure we encourage the listenership to call us.
Yeah, sure.
You know, that can be something we can do more in series too.
Yeah, maybe. It depends on if people want to talk. I think they're probably just raring to go. Their hands are hovering over their iPhones.
Yeah.
So just do it.
Just do it.
Yeah. Even if you interrupt us, we don't care.
You know, I'm sort of regretting immediately my offer for people to call, because I realize if I'm enthusiastically offering people the opportunity to call and talk to us and we get through the full hour without taking any calls, it kind of reveals... It's a little bit too much information about the level of engagement of our listenership. It doesn't indicate how many people are listening, but it does speak to their level of engagement. Well, or should I not worry about that?
I don't think you should worry about it, because I think it's okay. I mean, I'm assuming that we have 10,000 to 50,000 listeners. We just might have that small portion of society who isn't interested in engaging. They just sit back with their pipes and their smoking jackets, because I think those two things go together.
Yes.
And then they have... whiskey?
Whiskey and a dog and a newspaper.
Just, yeah, and they're just really appreciating.
Next to the fire.
And they only have the newspaper because they have a dog.
Yeah.
But they're listening, not reading the newspaper. They're listening to us. They're sophisticated. They don't necessarily feel the need to get involved.
Which sounds like they're skewing to an older demographic, but it's actually just a hipster demographic.
Oh, no, it's like a 17-year-old in like a really overly large smoking
jacket. And the
truth
is, 17 to 25-year-olds actually, you know what, they don't really make phone calls. I mean,
that's true.
I don't make a lot of phone
calls.
And
I do get a lot of texts on air.
Yeah, just, so maybe, you know what, I take that back. You know, if you want to, or if you've already taken to heart the offer to call, go ahead and do that. Go ahead and give us a text at 604-UBC-CITR. I'm not sure that I'll have the ability to respond to it.
It might be a robot voice.
It could be a robot
voice. Which would be great.
But there's only one way to find out. But it is fall, or the fall is upon us. I guess it's about a week or two away. But
It's coming.
It's funny. A week or so ago, I saw a bunch of leaves that had fallen to the ground. Today was a nice warm day here in Vancouver. But the telltale sign, I saw a bunch
It's coming.
Not just a couple leaves, but like piles of leaves in the gutter. I thought, this is an October sight. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
But how do you feel, Keith, when summer turns to fall?
Well, you know the answer to this question.
I haven't read your paper.
Oh, that's true. But in general, I'm pretty well known as a fall booster.
And fall and spring equally, because they're both just right in terms of the temperature?
Hell no.
Or specifically fall?
Spring can go do its own...
Can go the way of fall.
...business. Man.
So why is it fall?
I'm pointing.
I'm assuming summer's too hot.
I love fall. Is this a segue?
It could be.
Because I wrote
how you want to cope with it.
Because today, for the first time, I wrote a thing specifically for the show.
You are an essayist, amongst
mm-hmm,
other things.
I am.
And you've written an essay to speak to...
A demi-essay.
I haven't heard it or read it, but I think it's about the fall.
Yeah, it's about fall.
Do you want to launch into your essay?
Yeah, I can, and then maybe we can talk about it more
after.
We'll
talk about it after. Folks, sure. If you're just listening to CITR 101.9 FM, this is Jeff Bryant speaking very quickly. This is Now We're Talking. Keith Kennedy is with me as always. He's now going to read an essay that he has penned with his computer and that we printed off painstakingly at a library here at UBC. It is now about to happen. Go ahead and give a listen to Keith and his essay about the fall.
Fall is my favorite season. Has been since I can remember, though I know my distinct love for the season of forlorn brown lawns and red and yellow tumbling leaves was solidified by my move to the West Coast when I was young. I was a freshly post-preteen 13-year-old with a thin mustache and a penchant for not realizing how inappropriate said mustache looked to others of my age group. At my new school, I was instantly grouped with the other gangly young man with a thin mustache, a not-so-popular fellow, though charming in his singularity. No more was he to remain singular, my presence proclaimed, until the day after my initial shaming when I learned to shave quick as you like. Part of my budding love was due to the fact that fall was warm. In Newfoundland, where I was born and half-raised, fall was the beginning of winter, a time to cross fingers, holding out hope that we wouldn't have to use the shovels as soon as last year. Here in the glory of the Pacific, I wore shorts well into October. Though I don't recall a specific incident, I was probably ridiculed for that as well. Luckily, my legs were not as hairy as my upper lip had been. Fall anywhere is beautiful, but here it is color and change and life. And before I get too sappy, it is the season of horror. And by that I mean the horror film. Halloween's not my favorite holiday. I don't go in for all the costumes and tricks, the treats or the decorations or the occasional razor blade apple. I'm more into the pagan reality, the idea that it's a festival to celebrate things that we normally ignore when they go bump in our closets at night. This desire to embrace the rotting underbelly led me to the most accessible supernatural depository in our culture, the horror section at the local video store. In my first months of life in this new place, being a newfie, a mustachioed gentleman of 13, and having no idea how to avoid ridicule, I believe I showed up for my first day of high school in cowboy boots. I had much time to myself. So I would ride my bike, another luxury not available to me in the September and October of my snow-covered youth, to the local video store. I'd rent two horror movies, pick up Pringles and a 2-liter Pepsi, and head home for a night with my favorite things. What exactly is that thing? I'm no thrill seeker, but horror provides adrenaline, the facing of one's mortality and the indulgence of our baser, lizardy parts. It allows one to relish in the spilling of blood, the screams of terror, and the mutilation of friendly neighbors and camp counselors without ever being faced with real-life consequences. It allows you to dive into that creeping feeling in your spine, to embrace the monster under the bed, and to find solace in the simple arc of a hero's efforts to stay alive. It's survival at its purest, adversity faced, and our most defeating of emotions conquered, all with sexy lighting and haunting music. And let's not forget the occasional naked lady. Fall to me means beauty. This beauty of nature's more earthy colors, and the beauty of facing terror in a way that teaches lessons, without the risk of major head trauma. It is the beauty of how different the corners of our world truly are, as well as the beauty of a midnight skinny dip. Fall is all the horror and all the joy, all the things that matter most to me in the world. And, of course, a relief from the insidious sweatiness of the bastard summer nearly forgotten.
Very nice. That was Keith Kennedy's essay, his ode to the fall.
Ode to fall.
There's a few things that I noticed, but the main thing I want to draw attention to is the image of sort of a cowboy on two wheels. Am I correct that you, when you were riding the bicycle, you were still wearing the cowboy boots?
No, though I did wear them at inappropriate times for a while because they were very expensive cowboy boots, mm-hmm. and they were trendy where I came from. In Newfoundland, that was a lot of us wore those. And so I had to find ways to wear them when I moved here because they were really nice and expensive, but I was made fun of for wearing them.
And you say you wore them on the first day of school.
Yeah.
And when you did...
My best duds.
When you did that, I'm trying to understand whether... Were you under the misapprehension it would make a big splash? Or just, like, was more of a neutral perspective? Like, in other words, people... Some will like them, some won't. But you certainly didn't think they'd fail to make an
impression. No, I didn't. I had a strange sort of experience because I came into the school to be introduced to the place
before
my
commenced?
Actual first day, and so I had an idea that no one else was wearing them.
But was there any tumbleweed at this orientation?
This is what I was thinking. Oh, that's a small bit. That's just a little enough to confuse me.
Yeah,
like a half a tumbleweed. No, actually, the woman who interviewed us was named Mrs. Tumbleweed, and that was okay. Just like I was like, this is okay.
It's a sign.
Yeah. So I rode my horse home.
How do you know that the cowboy boots didn't work out well in that first
well,
day?
Were you wearing, to answer your first question, I wore them specifically because I thought, you know, you're the man. Like, this is cool that you're cool. Like, because when I was younger,
this
I was
grade eight.
Yeah, and when I was younger, and I was in junior high. It's a different system in Newfoundland. I was in junior high there, and I was kind of like
one of the older guys.
I was a jock, and I was a cool guy,
right?
And I was wearing trendy clothes. And so when I moved here, I thought that would transfer. I'd be different, but I'd be just as cool,
right?
But it turned out, to answer that the more recent question, that no, it was really clear that people thought I was lame. And I think there was at least one specific comment about my cowboy boots.
Now, I also want to understand, because I've always, I've worn cowboy boots a couple times, I think, but it's the choice of whether to tuck the pant leg into the boot or around the boot. Now, if it's around the boot, you can still see the shape of the shoe and surmise that it's a cowboy boot, but it doesn't scream cowboy in the same way.
No.
Now, did you have the pants tucked in or not?
I didn't have them tucked in because it wasn't a Western thing.
Okay.
We're not, I didn't.
Maybe it was clicking as you walked down the halls or
no,
something?
No, I mean, I grew up in a rural area, but I wasn't like an actual cowboy. Mm-hmm. It was just a trendy thing. And so it was definitely jeans over.
Okay.
And, but still, they were like, they're not like the kind of cowboy boots that look like other boots. They were like pointy toed, light brown, that sort of classic stitching on the toe.
So your first,
and maybe I did click a little.
Your first day of school when you came to BC was also the first day of school for everybody else there?
No, it wasn't. So this is what was confusing too, is in junior high in Newfoundland, it's 7, 8, and 9.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in grade 8. I moved in the middle of the year. So I entered the school year in the middle of grade 8, which in BC is
God,
the first
tough.
Year of high school. So
that's
I went
hard.
From being in the second year of junior high to the first year of high school halfway through a season.
Yeah, that's hard. I think that's hard for any kid going from, you know, any new school, but all the way the other side of the country, that's something else.
Yeah. I think I had trouble making friends as anybody would at first.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of, like, what's the opposite of romanticized? I sort of blended all of those normal behaviors and concerns into this idea that I was being made fun of because I was from Newfoundland
mm-hmm.
or because I was wearing the wrong clothes. And I almost made it worse on myself, hence diving so delving, I suppose, so deeply into this horror movie thing
mm-hmm.
where I just felt like I was by myself and it was unjust
mm-hmm.
and I had to do something.
When did that turn around? Now, of course, I've taken your love letter to the fall into a whole new direction.
That's
here.
That's good, though.
We'll get back there in a second, but I'm curious to know, when did that begin to turn around for you? When did you begin to be accepted by a peer group?
Well, it's funny. I remember making an effort.
Mm-hmm.
I was just smart enough to realize that it wasn't going to turn around on its own necessarily, or at least as quickly as I wanted, because mm-hmm. I had come from they threw me a party when I left. I had lots of friends at school.
Mm-hmm.
They threw me a party.
Mm-hmm.
The teachers and like the students, and it was a big
deal. Even.
And this was a big junior high. It wasn't just like a little school.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. I felt like I had no tribe anymore.
Right.
And
yeah.
So I remember making a specific effort where I lied.
Mm-hmm.
One of my friends in Newfoundland had skateboarded like once. And in BC, there was a whole group at our age, there was a whole group of skaters, like a bunch of guys who identified with skateboarding, and they had skateboards with them at all times.
A very specific culture.
Very specific
You're
culture.
Like looking for a group of friends. Okay, these guys.
Yeah, and I don't even know why I chose them, except for the fact that it was clear because they had a skateboard, and I went, my friend had a skateboard. And I remember sort of telling a story to one of these guys about skateboarding back
home. He's like, you skate, man?
I don't know. He didn't talk to me. I had to approach him. And I was really lucky. I just so happened to pick the guy of the group who was a really friendly guy.
Okay.
And so he and I became, you know, on campus friends
mm-hmm.
a little bit.
Because he saw that you had an appreciation for skateboarding.
Yeah, and then I don't know if
was ever, he
ever
like, do you
want
to come and skate at the
No, because I think he was a bit
store?
Of a poser too. That's why it worked out. I don't think he was very good. And he was sort of my first one. But then because I had like a little, like I sort of had a friend like that, and then I had someone in my homeroom who was good to me, and we ended up becoming friends in the long run. So there was these little seeds. And then, of course, naturally, that tided me over until I met some people. I had a biology class, and my buddy Dave was in that class with me, and our mutual friend Nick was in that class, and slowly you realize that you have similar tastes, or you know, you like to cheat the same amount or whatever.
Okay, so back to your ode to the fall. What else do you want to say about it? Let's talk about it.
Well, it's kind of cool just to try to write something specifically for the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done that before, and so it's I'm not one to do a lot of drafts of anything,
mm-hmm.
and so it was an interesting prospect to just write a thing for a purpose and do it. and instantly perform it. That doesn't happen all that often, unless maybe you do stand up on a regular basis and you have new material you're working out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not often that I get to do it. If I write an essay normally, it gets filed away and maybe I'll find a place for it eventually, maybe never.
Did you feel like it should have music underneath it?
No.
Or no, it was good?
I didn't.
To let it be its
own
thing.
But that's probably because I have to believe that it's good enough on its own.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not for me to say if it needs music.
Give us a call, folks, or text us at 604-UBC-CITR. When you heard Keith do the monologue, were you missing the sound effects from that could have been underneath, or perhaps the music, or do you like letting it speak on its own accord? Mm-hmm.
Maybe Jesus Christ Pose by Soundgarden or something.
And just the hook, or just by the hook, I mean actually just the lyric of the title,
mm-hmm.
like over and over. Jesus Christ.
I think that suits the tone.
We got to try that.
I might have read it wrong.
No,
that's the tone I was thinking of.
And it's super loud.
Oh, it's my favorite season.
It's like drowning you. You ever going to compete with it?
No, my distinct love.
But so how are you feeling right now that it's the fall? Are you relieved that you're not as hot?
I love it, man. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like the heat, even though I've grown to, acclimatized? I've grown to appreciate it.
See, for me, the fall is more ominous because it means that winter's next. And for me, it's just like the days are shorter, it gets darker.
That's what it felt like when I lived in a place where there was a lot of winter or a bad winter. I think that's part of what I was sort of hitting on in that little piece there was that it doesn't feel like that here to me.
Hmm.
Because I grew up in a place where it did feel like that.
Right.
Here, I really did have shorts on Halloween the first year I was here. And I didn't choose to do that on purpose just to make like a statement. I just didn't need pants yet. And I was blown away by that. And do you remember the fire they used to have in Oak Bay?
Mm-hmm. The
big
bonfire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember I didn't have any friends. Maybe I had a few friends by then, but I remember going out to the bonfire. And
I don't know if that's I know that's a kind of a Halloween, or it's actually called Guy Fawkes Day in the UK. I think it's November 5th. It's around that time where they have a bonfire. And that's in the community, and that's a ritual. I don't know if that's a ritual in Canada or if they just burnt a bunch of stuff.
It is in Newfoundland. Guy Fawkes
Day. Guy Fawkes Day is.
Yeah, they call Guy Fawkes Night, actually, Newfoundland. It's such a big deal, and everyone burns things.
No, but in Victoria, it wasn't the Guy Fawkes
thing. No,
it was on Halloween.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, I don't know whether bonfires and Halloween go hand in hand or if that was the experience we had.
The Devil's Night thing.
Okay.
I think we're talking about. So it's the night before Halloween. I think it became a thing. I don't know when that started. I don't know the history of Devil's Night, but I know it's supposed to be. Oh, I've lost it now. I know it's like the night before is supposed to be like even worse than Halloween in terms of supernatural things, or in terms of like that's when the dead actually come out. I can't remember the actual story, but I know what happened was it got corrupted by people who just want to go smash things and burn things.
Is this one of the things that happens during the fall that you enjoy? Halloween, that's one of your benchmark experiences in the fall?
Yeah, but I associate Halloween almost specifically with horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
Halloween to me is when I do my horror.
That's the horror holiday.
Yeah, it's when I do my horror movie marathon, which I've done since.
That's
got
to contribute
really
to your
little
love of the fall. You know that it's time for the horror holiday.
Totally. But Halloween.
Is that your favorite holiday?
Halloween,
for
no.
that reason?
No. No, so Christmas is still my favorite holiday because that's when I get all the goodies.
So the holidays keep you going
throughout
like the fall and the winter, as they probably do for a lot of people.
Yeah. But Halloween, I get a kick out of it. Anyone who sort of has ever immersed themselves in supernatural things or the occult or read books about witches or watched movies about zombies, I mean, it's all there for you. But the idea of dressing up and candy and decorations, like I'm too lazy for decorations. I'm an anti-decoration guy.
Do you want to talk about the news?
Yeah, okay.
Jeff and Keith present this week's news. Now, topical.
Yeah, so what happened in the news this week? I'm sure things happen in the news. But what stood out for us is the question.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the answer? Folks, by the way, you can call us. If something happened in the news, let us know. 604-UBC-CIT or 604-822-2487? Yeah, I guess I do. It's funny, you know.
You need a monocle.
I got two monocles actually last year, and I stuck them together.
Oh, right, with that wire frame thing.
Yeah, that's right.
That's weird.
I got my first pair of glasses last fall, and I've never had glasses before, and it really changed
your
my
life,
world
yeah.
in a way. Like it really blew my mind. Like you don't know how lacking your vision is until you get it corrected, I guess. But I haven't really had occasion really to wear it. I don't wear it when I watch movies or read or what have you. But every once in a while, something will be just a certain distance away, like this bit where it says the phone number for the studio line.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize Yeah.
It's funny. I should be a good moment. I can see it upside down. I've got glasses on.
Well, look at you with your upside down.
604-822-2487.
Upside down glass reading. But what happened in the news this week? I mean, what's anything stand out?
Well, just this morning, the Jaden Smith hoax thing.
Oh, there was a hoax.
It's so weird.
See, I don't know about these hoaxes because I don't use social media that much, but this sounds like one of those things where somebody posts it on Facebook, somebody reads it without confirming that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
I think really this tendency, this is a good example, I think, the fake death hoax,
mm-hmm.
of how I think there's a large percentage of the population who will not corroborate information.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it's literally just a matter of being like information that says right here and copying and pasting, Googling it,
yeah.
and finding one other source or seeing if there's online chatter about it. Enough people will not do that.
Yeah, journalism is dead.
Hoaxes can be easily
Well, that's why this is newsworthy to me.
Mm-hmm.
To newsworthy.
To newsworthy.
Because it's obviously a bunch of nonsense and it eats up a huge, you know, portion of people's time for no reason and like propagates like a virus. That's probably what
they
call them, viruses.
When somebody dies, just copy and paste it in Google, please. Before you copy and paste the link.
That's what I did. So my wife,
for the hoax.
I'm looking, my wife's sitting on the couch and she's upset. She's a fan of Will Smith and she thinks something bad. So I'm like, what's going on? She says, Jaden Smith killed himself. And I went, nope, that probably didn't happen. And then she went, no, it says CNN on the bottom. So I went, well, I turned around to my computer and I Googled it. And sure enough, as long as there's one or two things there that don't blatantly say that, like if somebody dies, if Alan Rickman dies, everyone says Alan Rickman died. The year they start talking about his life. This, if it says, one person says maybe the word hoax in their head, then it's not. It's not a thing.
Yeah.
So it doesn't take, like you said, it doesn't take much to check. And yet, who has the time?
The people who generate these hoaxes about people dying where they've not died, why are they not sort of, to take a page out of your playbook, when somebody does die,
mm-hmm.
why don't they post so-and-so died hoax in order to throw people off? Like if they're so, committed to the principle of throwing people off about who's dead and who's alive, shouldn't it work both ways?
I guess
ways?
What it comes down to is that's not their motivation.
I guess not.
What is their motivation?
Exactly.
The
clearly it isn't to spread disinformation
broadly. No, it's
just
like to have a thing
death.
To say. Is that what it is? Like,
I don't know.
I don't get it.
And maybe it's just to reveal that people do not corroborate information. But really, you have to ask yourself,
the
what percentage of people know what the word corroborate is? And maybe there's a direct correlation mm-hmm. with corroboration.
Corroborate.
There's a corroboration correlation.
Yes.
Is what I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
And
Are you rapping?
If you put a beat underneath, then I'd have even more to say.
Do I have to collaborate with your corroboration?
Yeah, come and collaborate with my corroborate. We can collaborate. Oh, dear.
Oh, man. We can actually rap really well.
Well, and ironically, actually, Jada Pinkett Smith was in the movie Collateral with Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise.
Interesting segue.
So that fits together really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, he's alive, so we're not too, worried about that.
But that was a thing today that seemed everywhere. So I guess mm-hmm. that makes it, just because it's everywhere, it makes it newsworthy? I don't know.
Well, what's interesting is if you think about a death rumor, a death hoax, going back 20, 30, 50 years ago, there'd be, I guess it works both ways, but it wouldn't be so easily dismissed by quickly consulting the internet.
You might think that your favorite...
You'd walk around with that for a while.
Your favorite singer was dead for a year.
Yeah. But of course,
I mean, a week.
By the same token, it couldn't be the false information couldn't be spread as quickly. Mm-hmm. I guess.
Oh, that's true. So only you and a couple other schmucks would think something wrong.
But like you could be at school and you'd hear about something horrible happening, and you wouldn't really have any. Now you can instantly. We were talking. Today is 9/11. It's the 15th anniversary of 9/11. We were mm-hmm. talking earlier, you and I, about how we heard about that, and it's you can easily. Substantiate that.
Mm-hmm. I was
now
made me think that because you said school or announcements, they made me think of JFK and how big a thing that was culturally for those people who had that announced to them. Can you imagine today the idea that someone would announce that a figure was dead?
Yeah.
And instead of everyone going, "Oh my God, JFK is dead," we go like, "That's probably not true."
Yeah.
And then what if it is?
Let me consult my miniature computer.
The difference in that. Culturally, right? Where was it? You just take news, and that says a lot about news and journalism too. That there was a time when you would trust it, and now there's a time when it makes total sense to people like you and I to not trust it.
You know, it's interesting.
Look it up yourself.
And I kind of harp on this topic a lot, I feel like, in the show, but I find it interesting. But just how technology affects how information is spread and how we live. But with today being the anniversary of 9/11, you know, it doesn't seem like something that happened that long ago. Mm-hmm. And you think of it as being something that occurred in the internet age.
Yeah.
But the truth is, in 2001, while yes, the internet was a thing,
mm-hmm.
and most people I knew had an email address, it was not by any means a pervasive
thing.
That's
about 4 or 5 years into its regularity.
It was not by any means a pervasive thing contrasted to today. So yes, people generally had email addresses that they checked when they went home mm-hmm. and sat down at their desktop computer.
Yeah.
But there was no Twitter, no Facebook, no YouTube, mm-hmm. and the list goes on. And therefore, that was actually something that was largely, I think people experienced it in the media, typical conventional media, the TV and radio.
That's how I experienced it. I got up in the morning instead of going right to my computer for Facebook feed like I do now.
Exactly.
I turned on the TV.
That's how you would find out today. You would while you're still in bed, you'd check your phone.
Exactly.
Your Facebook.
Whereas I saw it on the TV.
And people would be talking. And also there'd be a conversation about it amongst your peers
mm-hmm.
rather than just hearing a talking head on the TV. And also, of course, when something horrible like that happens, there'd be a lot more reporting from citizens mm-hmm. in terms of them capturing images and video.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we don't want the show to be about 9/11, but it is, you know, the anniversary of that. And that's one thing I was reflecting on is, man, it doesn't seem like that long ago in my mind, but it was quite 15 years. I mean, 15 years ago, if you told me about something that happened 15 years before that, that was mm-hmm. that felt like a long time.
Well, it makes me think of World War II to talk about another fun time.
Oh, right.
Because you as a history guy, you know a lot about it. And a lot of people do know a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
I never did know a lot about it.
It was in Europe and in Asia. A lot mm-hmm. of people don't know that part.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I didn't know a lot about World War II. And when I was younger, I had this block when it came to learning about wars. I was a big fan of learning in general.
Hmm.
But for some reason, I just had no interest in the horrors that man could do in a modern society. And I'm a hypocrite because I used to love old wars. Like, you talked to me about, like, the, you know, Carthage. I'm like, I'm super in.
Ancient wars.
Yeah, I love that stuff. But anything that was sort of close to home. But what I remember thinking was that the reason I don't get so riled up about world wars is because I never had anyone who was connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you talking about 9/11 being 15 years ago, that's sort of what I'm thinking is that when you live through something or your parents lived through something, then it always seems a little closer, right? Like, that's 15 years ago, but that's probably going to feel like it wasn't that long ago in 25 years because we were there to experience it.
That was our JFK moment. Of course, I referred to it as our JFK moment, but you could easily say that JFK was a 9/11 moment mm-hmm. or what have you. But
yeah, but it was. It was a big one. And I think if you live through those, then they always seem a bit more recent.
Right? You remember seeing the movie JFK, I'm sure,
yes.
which came out, I think, in 91 or something, mm-hmm. years before that. And I remember thinking, wow, what was that like when everybody was so affected by an event? And it seemed larger than life, like World War II. It's just black and white. It's from back in the day. It might as well be 500 years ago. You're so removed from the experience of it. And 9/11 was our JFK mm-hmm. moment.
But yeah, and it gives you some perspective. Like I said, now I understand a little better when someone talks emotionally about World War II. I understand it a bit better because of 9/11. And maybe if there's a positive that can be taken from those tragedies is it does give you an impetus to go back and understand these things historically and mm-hmm. understand the cycle of violence and where these things come from a little bit better. And maybe that's the only way to combat those sort of things is to each of us to try to find something positive about that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of discussion and talk about all the things happening in the world and terrorism and death and destruction. That's a real thing. But it's important to understand that As far as I'm aware, the world there's less violence and destruction in war mm-hmm. than there's ever been.
Yep.
And that's not to make light people are suffering in the world.
No, and they're all.
But that's interesting to think about, and it is optimistic to at least be aware of that in terms mm-hmm. of a trajectory.
Yeah.
Because I think the same people that don't know how to spell corroborate. I'm on to you.
Yeah.
You section of society, I think there's a healthy portion of the population who would imagine, based on their experience of the media and not mm-hmm. really knowing about such things, that would think the world is worse than ever.
Yeah,
but it's actually not.
Yeah,
it's actually better, and it's getting better.
Yeah, you know me. I'm a huge fan of that. I'm a big find a positive kind of person, and a lot of statistics in a lot of areas support that idea that there's less war than there's ever been.
And it's a fact.
Yeah, and that we're not threatened by the things that people are afraid of. It's a great lesson to realize that the things you fear are most likely not going to hurt you in your lifetime. They're not going to come near you.
And easy for us to say in our,
of course,
in
yes,
our comfortable basement in Canada.
Sweet.
But it is true. It is true. And I think it speaks to how the world is evolving and hopefully consciousness is evolving. But
yeah, and it's good. It's good for context and things like when the gun conversation comes up in the States, because it's really easy to say there's like a tragedy du jour in the media all the time, but there's a lot. Look into it. When you have a gun violence in the States, that happens tens of thousands of times a year. Mm-hmm. Whereas just because we're talking about 9/11, say that a terrorist attack on American soil happens two or three times maybe a year that they can attribute. That's a big disparity in what we're afraid of and maybe what we should be spending our time addressing.
Right? It's amazing to me in terms of the gun conversation in the U.S. It's amazing to me that when there's more guns than people, that there's not more gun violence. Certainly compared to what we are accustomed to in Canada, it's colossal, the amount of people that shoot guns at each mm-hmm. other in the U.S. That's true. However, relative to the number of people that possess guns, it's amazing to me that it's not more of a problem, that it's not more of the Wild West.
Yeah.
Especially in states where you're allowed to carry a firearm in public in your day-to-day life.
And I don't mean to take away from the fact that it's 9/11 and talk about the fact that this is a bigger problem than that. Anytime people die, just to be clear out there, it's a horrible thing, and I'm not trying to belittle that. I just, in the frame of mind of wanting to find positives in these things, you know, it's good to remember it. It's good to take that a little further and think about what the context in our world is. And it would be nice when a gun violence thing happens if we did that for that too. You know, when these things come up and they come around historically, it's an opportunity to look at where that is in our society and how we can improve. Because whether you're progressive or conservative, I'm doing air quotes, we all do want to progress in terms of not murdering each other.
Yeah.
And that's a thing that I think all political viewpoints can agree, that progress doesn't have to be a horrible term. In fact, it's how we got to a place where we have less war in the world than ever before.
So I feel like we just had a very diplomatic, reasoned, and healthy discourse about 9/11 and gun violence. And of course, the phones are not lighting up.
That's because we didn't say anything controversial.
No. So now I feel like we should have a conversation if we want it to be extremely controversial.
Okay.
And I'm just going to stare at this button, which is currently blank, and see if we can make it flash. Uh-huh. Or not.
Just
or
so just everybody knows, we're joking. We get hundreds of calls every show, and we just ignore them.
That's
the picture.
I don't want to tip my hat too much, because I think it's best to leave some mystery. But the inside joke that Keith and I share here is that the phones ring off the hook.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's ringing before we can even sit down. Yeah. So we're kind of sharing a private little laugh when we talk about trying to encourage people to talk.
But if you call.
Because it's out of control.
If you call, we'll get yours.
We're talking to you right now. No, not you.
No. You know who you are.
You.
Yeah. So if you call, we'll pick up your call.
You. And this person, is like, what's the number?
Yeah.
What is it again?
See, it's letters or something. They're not going to bother.
He's like, that's not a real thing.
No.
And if it's a 1-800 number, maybe, but 604 numbers aren't then comprised of letters.
No. It's ridiculous.
Anything else in the news this week?
Well, I don't know if you want a 9/11 anymore, but we were talking about that mattress store.
Oh, yeah. I was telling you about that. You can check it out online, but there was a mattress store in Texas that is no longer a mattress store. You can check it out for yourself. You might have heard about it, but it was just kind of a typical, it wasn't even, I think, for broadcast. I think it was just like, it was almost a shot on somebody's phone.
Or maybe for local cable or something?
I honestly think it was just shot on somebody's phone and they just posted it on their website. So to say a commercial is kind of overstating the case, but regardless, it was like the manager of the store and I think her employees, and they're in acknowledgement of 9/11, the deal was you could get a queen size or king size or double mattress for the price of a twin.
Mm-hmm.
And she had two employees behind her next to two
stacks
of twin mattresses.
Jeez.
And then it was, they dive into the mattresses and they feign horror. It was, and then she says, let us never forget. It was, to me, it's just, I don't know, people make mistakes, and we see people make mistakes and they admonished for that or crucified for that on the internet. But I'm just actually kind of fascinated watching that. Like, They just don't.
Yeah.
Don't
How are you so unaware of the train wreck that you're part
of? I think
of?
You got to. I think it's easy to say that when you're watching from the outside. I think anybody can make a mistake
for sure,
and it can be amplified.
It doesn't
on the
mean
internet.
They're horrible people.
They
or
turn
anything.
Into. They're turned into a caricature.
Yeah.
That's sort of exaggerated, but my God, like, yeah. It's just it's comical. It's yeah. like it's so extreme.
Yeah. They don't know how to spell corroborate. I just said corroborate instead of corroborate.
If ostensibly the idea is to sell more mattresses, like. Is your belief that this will sell? It's an incredible display of stupidity.
Yeah.
Or of
genius?
Definitely not genius.
Okay, because that's what I'm afraid. It's like, is that how you get more people? Obviously, it didn't work because their mattress
store
is closed.
It's some sort of weird performance art thing, which it probably isn't, or it's just an incredible display.
That wasn't an UGG ad at performance art, but about the idea that they would think that that's what they were doing.
Yeah, I don't know. Obviously, that's an extreme stretch. I'm just thinking hypothetically what could be possibly occurring, and it could be some sort of...
Well, that's the point, is it's so hard to understand
Andy Kaufman thing, what...
Actually. Yeah, you have to start thinking of ridiculous possibilities because it just makes no logical sense to pretend to be a plane and crash into a
tower.
And
there was, of course, there's a series of apologies, and then the first apology, which seemed to be... released by the people who created the video as opposed to the subsequent apologies, which are from like the owner of the store and what have you, was like kind of not trying to excuse it, but like saying, you know, we have a lot of veterans that work here and we know people who died on Ireland. And it's like, if that was true, why would you do it?
Yeah, that's the same as like
if you're saying that you have some sensitivity to it, then why would it occur to you? And this isn't even about this. What's funny about the story is it's not about being insensitive. It's just about being a complete moron.
Yeah, and that's also, to me, that's also moronic, the explanation that, that's like saying I can make a racist joke because I know a person of that race. It's like, I have a friend who's black, so I can say the N-word. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can't just like, oh, no, we're actually good people. Like, we're not really saying you're
not.
You
need to know 10 people.
Yeah.
That's the rule.
It's the actual rule, is you can make a racist joke as long as you know 10 people of that race.
That's right. Mm-hmm. No more and no less. It has to be precisely
exactly
10.
Yeah. So cut off number 11.
And you need to get that in writing.
Yeah.
Folks, you're listening and Now We're Talking. I'm Jeff Bryant,
in
your host. In English. Always broadcasting in English, typically. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC in Vancouver, British Columbia. With me, as always, is Keith Kennedy. This is episode 11. This is the beginning of what we are characterizing as Series 2.
Mm-hmm.
Series 2. It's a new season, literally, soon. This is September 21st, I believe.
Yeah, feels
next
like it's
week
already,
or two.
So.
But it's a new season of the show, or as the British say, series. Keith, go.
I just realized, did it sound at all when I said in English that I was criticizing the way you were speaking at that moment?
No.
Okay, good.
I actually wasn't even sure if that's what you did say.
It's like an out of radio moment where, as a friend, I just realized that something I said could have been taken like in a horrible way, and I couldn't not deal with it.
No, me actually saying it back was actually clarifying whether that is what you were saying.
Okay, because I was talking about like writing it in English if you were so foreign that it was a ridiculous reference to something before. But all of a sudden, I was like, did I just like insult the hell out of my friend on the middle of a radio show? In English, please, Jeff.
Sitting here seething with anger.
That's something about my personality that you just learn on the radio.
Flames of anger.
I cannot, I can't let things go like that. If I feel like I, like, hurt somebody's feelings, it drives me nuts.
We're going to try something new this week, folks. Keith is going to review a recent film or television series that he's been watching. I don't know if it doesn't have to be limited to one. It's up to you, Keith, but... in this past week, or in fact 2 weeks, it's been 2 weeks since our last broadcast because we were preempted last week. Have you seen anything that you want to talk about?
Yeah, so do you want to do the Netflix stuff or the outside Netflix stuff?
For this episode, let's specifically talk about things on Netflix.
Okay.
Next week we'll do Hulu. Then we'll do Show Me for Canadian.
Well,
in the interest of sort of containing it to something manageable that if you're out there and you have Netflix... You can go and watch what we're about to talk about.
Okay, well then I'll just say one brief thing outside of Netflix to get it off my chest.
Okay.
I saw The Danish Girl.
Mm.
Eddie Redmayne should have won every Oscar ever for that performance, and it's bull crap that he didn't. That's it. So Netflix this week. Yeah, I watched a bunch of stuff. Just recently I watched the Daddy's Home movie.
That's the one with Will Ferrell.
Yep.
And Mark Wahlberg.
Mm-hmm, together again.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's on Netflix. Okay, this is good too, by the way, because by focusing on what you saw on Netflix, it's a good reminder for people what's available on Netflix. So that's a film that I typically don't rent or purchase films, but I do every once in a while take a look on the Apple Store, and that's one that was available a couple weeks ago for 99 cents to rent.
Oh.
But I had no idea you could just watch it on Netflix for free if you're a subscriber.
Might not have been up yet, but...
Okay, so you saw it?
Yeah.
What were your expectations before seeing the film?
They weren't high.
Okay, you're just looking for, you know, passive
It's experience. One of those things where, like, I have to watch everything Will Ferrell's in.
Okay.
Like, I have to, because it might be the greatest thing you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
But he also has this way sometimes of playing, you know, the character that Will Ferrell often plays, just kind of like a bumbling simpleton, but he's lovable and you know, almost like a yuppie kind of well-mannered person.
Mm-hmm.
He takes that a little far sometimes.
I've only seen him in films where he portrays... Gestapo agents.
Like Mugatu or something.
Oh, is that Austin Powers?
No, that's a Zoolander.
Thank you.
That kind of guy. No, don't get me wrong. Will Ferrell does like ridiculous characters.
No, I've got you.
But every now and then, like you know, like Kicking and Screaming, the soccer movie he did. And,
yeah.
Even in the other movie.
Basically the guy who's like, get off the shed now.
Yeah, the other movie he did with Mark Wahlberg, which was The Other Guys, I think it was called.
Oh, that's right. He did do it.
He also played that kind of character and then sort of turned on his ear. And then with the Kevin Hart movie he made recently, which was about going to jail. I can't remember what it's called.
Get Hard.
Get Hard. He again played a soft sort of simpleton. And that's where some of that humor comes from. But it's not my favorite Will Ferrell when he does that. I really like when he goes nuts.
My favorite is like Ashley Schaefer from Eastbound and Down. That's what I like.
Yeah, that's a great show.
Yeah. But anyways, back to this
film. To me, it was one of those things where he played it a little too far that way. This time he's so nice and likable, and he's the stepdad in a family. And the story is that the real dad comes back, and the real dad is a motorcycle jacket wearing...
Cool guy.
Mark Wahlberg.
Cowboy boot wearing.
Yeah, exactly. And he's... he's the villain of the story, Mark Wahlberg is. But they make that big mistake that often gets made in narrative film where they never make the bad guy really bad.
Mm.
And the good guy isn't all that likable.
Hmm.
And so you're watching a movie that's like kind of funny, but it's not committed to being funny all the time. It's trying to actually tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of care about the situation. It's an interesting situation. Linda Cardellini's the wife in it, and she's wonderful from Freaks and Geeks. I don't know if you guys know her. But everyone I've ever met who watched the series Freaks and Geeks absolutely falls in love with Linda Cardellini because she's charming and wonderful.
She's one of the kids in it? In Freaks and Geeks, I mean?
Yeah, she's the sort of the older teenage girl in it. Everyone has a crush on her.
The older sister?
Yeah. You just get a crush on her right away. She's,
okay. Yeah, I haven't seen her in a while.
She's great. And she's looking great, doing a great job. Good to see her and stuff. And so Cass is good, does a good job, pretty funny. But because it's trying to have a real story and have some real heart, it falls a bit flat because you just don't know who to cheer for. You're not really against anyone. You kind of just end up watching Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell hang out, which is okay.
Do you enjoy Mark Wahlberg?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I like his shtick. And I like him in real movies better. I like when he actually acts.
Mm.
I think he's pretty solid and believable. He's one of those guys that you can be on his side. He's a great story. For like that oil rig movie that's coming up, I might not bother watching it, but you get the feeling that you'll be on his side in that film. You're just going to be with him as a hero. He's got that going from the Michael Douglas thing where you're just with that guy. He doesn't have to act, you know, his ass off, but you're with him. And I like that about him. But his shtick with Will Ferrell, it's fun. It's funny. But overall, it was like a moderate thumbs up for Daddy's Home.
And what else this week on Netflix?
I don't know if we want to go back, but I finally watched Tomorrowland.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I don't know if we want to spend a lot of time on that.
Well, I haven't seen that, and it's a film that it feels like I should have seen it.
Yeah, well, I felt the same way.
I don't know if
way.
I can say why. I think was it critically esteemed?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
It didn't do all that well, and people were a little bit disappointed.
Was it kind of like a CGI-enhanced experience?
Yeah, but it's Disney, though, so it's so high-end that it's not an issue by any means. It's really, really quality.
But is it like a fantastical movie?
Yeah, the idea is that tomorrow there's a place where the future got to be what it could be if it was run by positive people.
Hmm.
So there's this alternate Earth, almost. You have to get there through pressing a button, and it's just like the future, like you almost would imagine it in the 50s, right? Mm-hmm. Like sci-fi versions of the future with rocket packs and like sleek flying cars and, you know, architecture that's fun to look at as opposed to garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And our friend Nick liked it a lot, and that's why I ended up watching it, because I just thought, nah, I lost my enthusiasm, no one liked it, and so I just had it on my Netflix queue and just never got around to it, but... yeah, it's all right. I don't want to spend much time on it because it is exactly what you expect it to be, but it suffers really badly from a third act syndrome that I don't like a lot, which is not every character that has mattered up to that point is relevant in the third act of that movie. So you get a set of characters that you care about, and then one of the characters sort of just ends up like witnessing what happens at the end, which is a construct that often takes people out of movies. They might not know why, but when you don't care at the end of a movie and you kind of feel like, you know, when you watch a movie and it's just got like a Hollywood gunfight at the end, you're like, oh, I've seen this before. The reason you're noticing that is because you're not caring about what's going to happen to the people. If you care, then car chases and gunfights are fine if you care about the stakes. But if a lot of CG, the villain is a bit paper thin because he's a guy who, you know that thing with a villain where a great villain is a guy who has his own motivations and his own understanding and he doesn't know he's a villain? Sometimes, especially in Disney movies, they go a little soft on that. So they take that idea that he has a different understanding, but he never does anything too horrible. So you can't see him as a villain. You actually see him as a guy with another point of view. And so you're like,
similar to your saying with the last film, how they're just kind of not polarized enough.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you don't have someone to know who you're cheering for, and if it's a complex movie, don't get me wrong, I love ambiguous complex movies. But if you're making like a straightforward story arc with a beginning, middle, end, and the hero has a journey, then I need to care and you have to follow some of those rules. And if I don't have a villain and I don't have a proper hero, then I'm not going to care at the end of your movie.
Now, can we come up with a rating system? And I'm not, you know, you can amend it over time. It's not, don't worry about being locked in stone forever.
No,
but let's understand that historically, you know, obviously with Siskel and Ebert, thumbs up, thumbs down. Usually there's a larger spectrum than up or down, black, white, bad or good. It's usually a number of stars.
Right.
Or even with Rotten Tomatoes or Metacritic, there's a numerical value.
Yeah.
But what if we gave it an alphabetical value and not like a letter grade like you get in school, but all the way from A to Z?
Ooh, interesting.
Why don't we do that?
So it's a 26-point scale?
Yeah, instead of 100 options, 0 to 100, you've got 1 to 26.
But now I have to do that thing where I have to count backwards through the alphabet to find the
letter. Well, it'll be good mental
that's
exercise
terrible.
For you.
It'll be good for all the silence on the
this is yeah, exactly. This will be a great opportunity.
So what's
for
in the, okay, what's in the middle then? What's in the middle of the alphabet? I bet people know this right.
Well, there's 26 letters,
yeah, so
right? So there is no true middle
because okay,
there's
13
and 14, A B C D E F G H I J K L M and N.
Okay.
Those are the two middle ones.
Well, I think daddy's home is an M.
Oh, it's an M.
Does that mean it's just above?
Didn't quite make it to an N. That's
no.
an important.
Oh, is it the? Did I get it the wrong way? L M. No, because M wouldn't be M higher. A B C D F G H L M.
Now, folks, a lot of people would argue this is something that we could have discussed off the air, but I would argue that this conversation, very loosely put, is pure gold. In fact, I rate this conversation out of A to Z. An H.
Oh, interesting.
An H.
This is a terrible.
Okay, but you need to just, moving forward, let's just use your instincts here. So you give it an M.
Yeah.
Just snap judgment.
Yeah,
okay,
that's
and what about Tomorrowland or whatever it is?
Q?
He gives it a Q. He gives it a Q.
Do I have to have
no,
a...
Q was your first letter.
Oh, boy. Q and a half.
Q, no, no halves.
Q point Y.
You know, it's funny because now this week you're because I put you on the spot with it and I've introduced the concept. You're struggling, but from it'll be funny in future episodes to see how you just know that it's a Q or you know that it's an L.
Or in fact, every time I just say everything's a Q. That's how I deal with it.
Always a Q.
It's a Q.
The movie that I saw last night on Netflix was this one with. I actually saw a couple. I had a little bit of a Chris Pine fest.
Ooh, I love Chris Pine.
Do you
My
like
wife
Chris Pine?
Really likes Chris Pine.
He's got the dreamy eyes.
Yeah, like she'll like.
It's interesting.
In
he's a guy that's
style.
So good looking that I feel like it, I wonder whether the extent which he's like a classic American, like this white Ken doll, all American jock, blue eye. Like, obviously, it works to his advantage, but it also might work to his disadvantage because I kind of don't want him to win. He's such a pretty boy.
Oh, no. He's a cool guy. Watch the Shatner movie about all the captains, and you get to see the real him in that a little bit.
Hmm.
Or you watch the behind-the-scenes stuff from the Star Trek movies. He's, like, a pretty fun guy. I think you got the
I had no
that.
Opinion either way, but I just... I noticed that, you don't expect to see... depth. I don't know what you expect. That's what I was feeling. Anyway, let's get to the point
I love
here.
Him. I'd make
let's,
love
let's talk
to him.
About
He's
the movies
great.
That I saw because we're kind of getting off the point here.
Chris Pine is never off the point, Jeff.
I saw two movies. I saw Z is for Zachariah.
Okay.
Have you heard of that film?
I've heard of it, yeah.
And then I saw, oh man, what is it? It's the one with the ships. Did you see the trailer? I remember seeing the trailer for this a few months ago. And then it was one of these movies which I was pretty convinced it just didn't quite, wasn't going to hit the mark, but I just kind of watched it to confirm.
Oh, are you talking about like the, I know what you're talking about. I'm not going to remember the bloody name of it either.
It's basically the, whatever the name of the film is, it's like a name with like, the writers are like, what would be like a name of a movie that's not completely generic?
Yeah,
called,
I get it.
It's called The Finest Hours.
Right. And that's like kind of like a Perfect Storm or like an oil rig
exactly.
tragedy kind of film.
Yeah,
right?
it's Perfect Storm meets Braveheart. It's Perfect Storm meets
The Matrix meets Bridges of Madison
County.
It's
basically The Perfect Storm meets like a shitty movie.
Yeah.
It's something in between.
You have to use The Matrix because that's like the most common.
Yeah.
That's like a fact. It's the most common crossover movie name ever.
Anyways, I give that movie
Matrix.
You know what's funny is in our grading system, giving an A is the worst possible grade you can receive.
See, I still thought it was the other way around.
Oh, geez.
So I meant N when I said M before. Yeah. Man, that's a good thing you listened to right there.
Anyways, it wasn't very good, and I don't recommend it, but I did see Z is for Zachariah. What I found interesting about that movie is a lot of great actors. There's and same thing, actually, with this actress. Now, what's her name? She was in Wolf of Wall Street. What's her name?
Margot Robbie?
Margot Robbie.
Is it Robbie?
You call her Robbie, I'll call her Robbie.
Cool, we got it covered. Margot Robbie.
Robbie would definitely be more, I don't know, sounds sophisticated.
It's spelled
maybe.
Robbie, to be fair.
Yeah. Put like an umlauts over the O. Anyway, I thought it was, she you know, I see some range in her performance, so I thought she was actually quite good.
I've really liked
and
her.
And it wasn't,
things,
I think what I liked about that, again, coming back to like the prettiness thing is, I think after Wolf of Wall Street, she's obviously a good-looking young woman, and that was really the role, was she was really presented
was
as a sex object, you
know?
And so for me, it was important to see her do something not that wasn't that.
To judge her actual
skill, and it was, I really actually enjoyed seeing her in that movie, and it made me more interested to see what other films she does, because it wasn't limited to that archetype.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting you said it, because when you were talking about Chris Pine, it's kind of cool how that happens both ways. Where if a guy is not given a chance to stretch and show his range, it's the same thing where you think, oh, he's just a pretty boy, and you don't know if he's any good. It's harder to become a fan of that person. You want to see them work. You want to see them work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because if you see somebody in one film and they're incredibly attractive and they've got a really...
and that's their thing.
They've got a really great body and they do this kind of... one character where she kind of played like a girl from Staten Island or something. It's like you're not convinced. Maybe she can just do a sort of caricature.
Or maybe she's just from Staten Island.
Well, she's not. She's Australian.
No, I know.
And I knew that. Yeah. But again, just the fact that she's from Australia doing a sort of typical New York accent, like I'm just not sold. It's like if she can do that thing, good for her. But to me, it doesn't mean that she's a great actress. But seeing this, it was nice to see some.
No, I like
the
her.
Other guy in the film now, he's definitely got one of those names where like a 1950s the studio owner of Paramount, that kind of
Truck Jensen
cigar chewing character would be like, you got to change the name.
Okay.
He's an English actor. Mm-hmm. He was in
Benedict Cumberbatch.
No, he's been in a lot of great films. He was in Children of Men. He was in that film, which is a great film. Not Clive Owen, obviously. Yeah, he has a name that's just unpronounceable.
English guy. He's in what movie?
See, this is
hours?
The problem. If his name was Ted Smith, and I don't know if coming across as terribly unsophisticated or not, but if he changed his name to Ted Smith, I'd be like, this is one of my favorite actors, but now we're on the radio talking about
it. You think
you'd
remember it if it's a weird name.
Even right now, even though I've seen it spelled, I wouldn't even be able to wager a guess.
Okay, let me help.
Wait,
which movie was he in? Which of the two movies?
Okay, he was in Children of Men.
Yeah.
He was in Zia's...
For
Zachariah.
Which I haven't seen.
He was in... 2012. It's kind of making a big blockbuster film.
You're killing me.
Oh,
I have no idea. A British guy. Look it up.
Okay, he was in 12 Years a Slave. That would be a much... I'm trying to think of like movies he's
Michael
in.
Michael Fassbender.
No, that's not him.
Brad Pitt.
I just
got to go down.
It's funny, we're kind of at a position here in this conversation where either this has become painful to listen to for the listener, or
or they know.
It's kind of like, they know,
them.
Or it's kind of like a little game.
It's a game to get you to call in.
We should. Can we just go back 5 minutes, add some theme music, and pretend that we're playing a game where you're trying to guess the name of this?
Yeah, this is an
actor.
Again, Cumberbatch was in 12 Years a Slave.
You know, I'm going to be honest about something here right now, and one of the things that's making this much harder than it needs to be is, in my mind, I thought, okay, this guy's a black actor, but I'm going to see if it's possible to try to get my friend to figure out who it is.
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yes. Is that how you pronounce
yes.
it? Yes.
Well, some people say Ejiofor a little bit more.
Chiwetel.
But it's Chiwetel.
Twiddle.
Well, no, not quite that much, but it's Twiddle.
You know, it's a name that's hard to pronounce when you tell somebody that an aspect of pronunciation is not quite that much.
It is. I pronounced it wrong for years, and maybe still am pronouncing it wrong. But I think some people overdo the.
Don't get me wrong. Good for him. It's, you know, you mentioned the name of that actress that was in Freaks and Geeks and is now in that movie,
Linda
or whatever.
Cardellini,
and
yeah.
That, to me, is a perfect example of an actress who I vaguely know here. That is not, her name is not branded in Hollywood.
Yeah.
That is not a name that is on magazines, right? And it's an interesting thing when certain character actors are, you know, you've seen them in many movies, but you have no idea what their name is. It's hard enough to get to the level of being an actor that is in great films, that is nominated, but to get to the point where you're like a household name.
Yeah.
That's a really unique level of achievement. This guy with a name like that has managed to be in these great films, and he's maybe. Do you think he's on the cusp of that, being a household name with a name like that?
Well, I think he probably is because of 12 Years a Slave. But can I just say briefly how great a payoff that was after what we just went through?
Was it?
That is an amazing payoff. It wasn't just like a simple name. It was the guy with the most complicated, strangest
name. That's my point.
Name.
You know, it's funny because the degree to which his name is legitimately difficult to pronounce for somebody who has not encountered those names before is, you know, lessens somebody's accusation that I'm a flagrant racist. I'm not. These are two words that if you put them in front of me, I just haven't pronounced them before. Mm-hmm. Not even some of the syllables. You know, usually with names that you haven't pronounced before, regardless of what their origin is, you can take a stab at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I almost don't believe you that's how it's pronounced. Well, he was nominated for Best Actor at the Oscars?
Yeah, 12 Years
But
Slave.
He didn't win, but he was nominated.
I don't remember if he won. No, I don't think he did win. But I don't remember.
You think that would have been the name that John Travolta would have struggled to pronounce?
I'm sure he would have. Yeah. The question is, what would he change it to other than, what do you call him, like Chewie Ford or something? Like, what's his Hollywood name?
Who are some other actors who are quite well known, but people struggle? Charlize Theron, she's one of them. I'm saying pronouncing it that way, but that's actually not how her name's pronounced, I believe.
Well, it's funny because I think it is, but I say Charlize Theron.
It's neither of those. I've heard her clarify the pronunciation of her name before, and it's, you know, she's South African.
Charlize Theron.
As you said, when it's in like a caricature of a 1920s.
Yeah. Charlize. I'm teaching you the language.
Yeah.
Charlize.
Oh, do you speak Afrikaans?
Theron.
It's something, it's difficult. Who? What are some other actors with names that are difficult to pronounce?
Cumberbatch, Benedict Cumberbatch. I guess it's not hard to pronounce.
No, it's not, because you've seen the word batch before. You've probably worn a cummerbund.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, you have cues.
You've been a Benedict Arnold.
Yeah, you've heard of the words, right?
That's true. Fine. Let's find something much worse. Hard to pronounce? I don't know. Because it's the kind of thing where someone gets famous and you learn how to pronounce their name, right?
Well, that's typically the thing. And there's some outliers. This is an interesting one. Let me sound of campfire
under
there.
You're killing me.
Just to allow us to let this breathe out. We'll move on from this, Keith, but I just want to take a moment and let's just think if we can think of one other actor who has a difficult name to pronounce. Just to make me feel less racist. That's the challenge. Let's talk about that for a second. Isn't it interesting, though? In that situation, my thought was, you know, this would be the part where I'd be like, you know, the black guy, he's English. It would be at like the top of my list for descriptors.
Yeah.
Not with the intention to marginalize a section of the population.
That would help me get it for sure.
But to help figure it out. And here I'm listening, you'd be like, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah.
You know, who's the Fassbender? I'm like, well, it's obviously.
Well, it's funny because I actually didn't remember Chiwetel Ejiofor being British.
Did you assume it was a white person because I said British?
Yeah, percentages would dictate.
Because you weren't saying Idris Elba.
No.
Is that how you pronounce his name?
I knew Idris Elba wasn't in 12 Years a Slave. But I did. I thought Chiwetel Ejiofor was American because I always picture him from Serenity. You remember the Serenity movie, the Firefly movie?
No.
Chiwetel Ejiofor is the bad guy in that movie?
No.
And he's not. Does he have a British accent in that? I think we just discovered that I'm a racist.
Folks, you're listening to Now We're Talking, covering some interesting territory. We'd like to thank you for tuning in this week. This is the beginning of Series 2, and we're going to be back next week. We're always back Sundays at 6 p.m. You're listening to CITR. We invite you to stick around for the next show hosted by Gareth. It's called More Than Human, and we'll see you next time.